Hey, you are now listening to the Graceway Podcast. Let's talk with special guest host, Jeff Adams.
All right. Well, welcome, everybody. Jeff Adams here with Pastor Tim Dunn. We're going to talk, and we invite you to listen. Usually, Pastor Tim and I are sitting side by side, and today I happen to be checking in from San Jose, Costa Rica. And so it's good that we have learned a little bit about technology over the last year or so that we can do these types of things. Cheryl and I just listened to the second service, Pastor Tim, and we're very blessed by what you had to say. And so let me kind of kick things off this morning. And this is perhaps a touchy subject, but you spent the first few minutes of your time this morning talking about the recent ordinance in Kansas City to remask, and what a hassle that is for everybody. And I think everyone agrees about that. And then you gave some words of wisdom, some biblical words about why you're going to do that. And can I just say that we've been in Costa Rica for almost a week now, and everybody here is masked up, indoors and outdoors, and has been for such time. I don't think that the Costa Rican people enjoy it any more than the people in the United States. But the difference to me, and I find this especially true among believers, is no one feels like their liberties are being violated. No one is complaining, other than the fact that, yeah, we'd like to take the stupid mask off, but there is a public health emergency going on, and we have to obey. And that last word I threw in there on purpose because the title of your study today is The Freedom to Obey. And I think most people, and maybe even many American believers, depending upon their particular tribe, would see those two words as being contradictory. And I've heard you say so many times, my job as a pastor is not to think for you, but to teach you how to think biblically. So would you, as Pastor Tim right now, help us to think through this thing biblically? And how does this connect to your message? Because you said, okay, I'm done with this. Now let's move into 1 John. And I'm sitting here thinking, you've just been teaching us what you're going to teach us. Do you see that connection? Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I've been studying that text for weeks now. And I think just in light of the mask mandate started to come alive to me a little bit more. But yeah, it's a really interesting thing. Just the idea of the freedom to obey is a almost, all due respect, kind of un-American concept, right? We're not prone to think through things that way. And it's been fascinating to me. I don't want to dive too deep into it, I suppose, but it's just been fascinating, kind of the outright rejection of Romans 13, the idea that God sovereignly appoints leaders, even when they make no profession of faith or Christian ideals or ethics. God still says, I put them there and I'm ultimately in charge, and calls us to obey, and calls us to, we have the freedom to obey because our ultimate trust isn't in that leader. Our ultimate trust is in the God who sovereignly appoint them there. And I think sometimes we overown that relationship, right? That I need to vet the viability of this leader to determine whether or not it's a biblical concept or a biblical leader. And none of that is in Romans 13. I mean, it is as macro can be. And then Paul goes into Romans 14 and talks to us about, you know, personal biblical convictions and the liberty that we have to let other people have liberty, right? And I think that's another, you know, we read that in our Bible reading group, you and I did today. And I just thought it was so helpful and so timely. And then, you know, John comes in and I just think it was such a different worldview right now than has ever been in my life, that all of these concepts are met with cynicism. All these concepts are met with suspicion. You know, the truth is really up for grabs and irrelevant. But I think as Christians, we really have to get back to the simple, basic truth-telling, simple, basic Bible-believing, simple, basic, if the Bible says it, I'm called to believe it and then act on it. And I think it, you know, the intersection of that is pretty obvious, right? Things like masks, things like, you know, some of the behaviors that we're called to have around this pandemic. And it, you know, you and I have talked at really significant length. Nobody is enjoying this process. Nobody. But I think as Christians, we really need to manage the biblical nature of our actions here and really not miss this opportunity that we have to respond very differently and very helpfully and very well to a very difficult time. But in order to do that, we're going to have to choose to believe some different things and act some different ways. So I don't know. I'm interested from your vantage point, since we're just talking. Does this feel unique, the level of vitriol, the level of compartmentalization? Does it feel unique to you in time and ministry, or would you say that we've been here before, or how would you be processing that?
Well, just to be a little open about my own personal life, I am in my 70s now.
Right. Just getting started.
Yeah, just getting started. But I can promise you that in the several decades that I have been around, I cannot remember a time when the church in America has been more divided. I've seen all types of divisions. It used to be the liberals and the fundamentalists and then the neo-evangelicals. And people have always had the tendency to put themselves in one tribe or another. But it just seems like the level of, just lack of honor and respect. You know, people could disagree. Like, I disagree with him because of this or that. And you said something last week in your study that you really bared your heart. And you said, I'm worried for the church. And you used church in the sense of capital C. In other words, the church in general. And this is the second country that I have been in since the pandemic. I've been in Mexico a couple of times since the pandemic started. And from believers in both places, I have heard that same concern. Like, what in the world is going on with the church in the United States? People are just, they're cursing each other. They're fighting each other. They're calling each other names. And and I love the way this morning you connected Romans 13 and 14. And Romans chapter 14 is basically saying, in a very quick summary, we should love our brothers. And if we're commanded to love our enemies, it seems like we ought to be able to handle loving our brothers. And and no matter how immature or wrong their beliefs might be. And that was basically what Paul was saying. But in chapter 13, as you pointed out today, Paul commanded us to obey the emperor, who, if my history serves me correctly, was Nero at that time, who was certifiably crazy. And so
what, using Christians as torches in his gardens?
Absolutely.
By, you know, that's the just
the wild animals and all of that. And yet Paul displayed that trust, not in the emperor, but trust in God. And you tied that together this morning, and let me just ask if you would kind of take us through that again, because what you did is you said that if our faith is truly knowing and experiencing God, then the result has to be obedience, right?
Yeah.
Unpack that. I thought that was powerful.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we could really get in the weeds, and, you know, I did this today, kind of the relationship between the will and the nature and God making our nature new so our will is freed to obey and all those kind of big ideas. But, I think John's a little bit more rudimentary than that. He kind of lives in, like, the put up or shut up land of, you know, no more talking. And I sort of feel like this, like, but let's stop debating. Let's no more talking about these uncontrollable macro concepts and conspiracy theories and all that kind of thing. Let's just get back to, do I trust God or not? Right? Can I trust that even if I didn't vote for the president, even if I don't agree, even if I think there's some big conspiracy behind the thing, when God says, and it's kind of a breathtaking concept, right? That God says, I put that guy there. You think about Paul writing that. I can imagine him kind of pausing as however he received inspiration from the Spirit. You know, like, you put Nero? what is this? And I we're nowhere near that, and we're still kind of fumbling with that idea. But it really is such a fundamental Christian value that come hell and high water, I either can or I can't trust God. And so many of the things that we're very concerned about right now, and I'm not gaslighting any of that, I get all that. I really think we're over-owning some of the issues. We're over-hypothesizing. We have this sense of I can do something about this, and this guy is or isn't agreeing or isn't helping. And I just don't think it's true. I think that there are things far beyond our control that we're going to trust somebody to help us, somebody to fix us. And I think what Paul is saying, don't trust any man, trust God. And I think the same is true today. You know, people saying Trump will save us. Paul's saying, nope, trust God. Biden's going to save us. Nope, trust God. Next guy is going to, you know, next gal, next what? No. As Christians, we can operate in freedom and safety and confidence because our guy already won, is trustworthy, is capable, is in control. And so when it comes to some of these applications like masks and things of that nature, they are as near to irrelevant to a truly Christian worldview as they could possibly be, right? There is no compromising of Scripture. There is no compromising of God's character in wearing a mask. That none of that is up for grabs, right? This is not a civil disobedience issue. This is as close to irrelevant as it could be. For a month, our mayor has asked us to wear a mask for the potential betterment and safety of our fellow citizens. We're still able to meet. We're still, you know. It's literally just the inconvenience of putting something on our face at the potential safety of somebody else. That feels as obvious as it could possibly feel to me. If you strip away the fears, the politics, the conspiracy theory, the cynicism, all of those kind of deals, and just take the Bible at face value, can I trust God in this? Is the Bible being compromised? Yes, I can, and no, it isn't. Okay, I'm wearing a mask.
Yeah, exactly. You said something else today that got me thinking. You said the aim of obedience is for the love of God to touch every part of our being. And you and I have talked before about our tendency. We all have it. I have it. You have it. We love to compartmentalize our lives. But it seems like right now that is what is happening. And what I'm hearing you say, correct me if I'm wrong, is that the love of God should really break down the barriers of the compartments in our life. And it's almost like what is happening today in so many parts of the church is our political or societal views are influencing our Christianity rather than our Christianity influencing our views of society and politics.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think, you know, it's what we talked about last week. I view God through my relationships instead of my relationships through God and culture and society. And, you know, we could go on and on and on. But yeah, you know, I think that for me anyways, that let the love of God touching every area of my life rather than, and obviously we would say the holiness of God, but we are prone to reduce this to morality and ethic and theology, right? And there is something to the love of God that for me anyways brings a temperament and a posture with it, right? They're God softening me, God drawing me, God compelling me in a way that kind of the rigidity of I'm going to follow the rules so God is happy. No, God's already happy with you and Jesus. And part of maturity being twofold, and I just touched on this today, maturity being the ability to receive the love of God. And I really, the longer I'm a Christian, the more I feel like that is maybe the truest test of maturity, the ability. If people could truly receive the love of God and its effect on them, you just think about who that person would be. But it's I'm truly receiving the love of God and I'm responding in love to obey Him, and that having a holistic effect on my mind, my relationships, my beliefs, my perspectives, and that God's ultimately looking for the total redemption, not only of creation but of me, every bit of me. And that he obviously holiness is wrapped up in that, but kind of the overarching, we would say, emotion that he utilizes for that is his goodness and love. And so I'm just saying, and I think John is saying, you know, I'm obeying from love and toward love because of love. And as I'm receiving and operating in that, something transformative and miraculous happens in and around me.
Yeah, you know me in my history, and this little area that we call Central America, of course, is where Cheryl and I received our formative adult years and experienced a couple of civil wars. And the reason that I think I'm still here today is because we took the posture not of pure neutrality. It wasn't that we were unengaged from the political consequences and the societal consequences or didn't care about them, but we simply said we disagree with the solution. The solution in our worldview is Jesus. And then what we had to do after that was to put obedient action into play and begin to minister to our fellow man, providing food and medicine and clothing and clinics and all of that type of stuff in the midst of a horrible war. And I think that's one of the things that I heard you working this morning, where you said that it's not choosing between morality and ethics and theology and society. All of those things are important, but we begin looking at them through the eyes of God.
Yeah, absolutely. God and relationship, I think, is the two pieces that. And yeah, I think, you know, you and I have spent a lot of time talking about kind of your ministry philosophy as it was shaped in a civil war in Central America. But it is interesting. Your theology was under pressure, right? And God used that pressure to bring you to, I think John would say, a biblical position. I do worry sometimes that we are coming to these positions in comfort, not in pressure, right? And there is something about, in the history of the church, us just being forced to the brass tacks of what God says and doesn't say that we don't have right now. We have so much abundance and so much comfort and so much hypothesis and so much privilege to be as cynical as we want, right? That I'm afraid about the conclusions that we're coming to, that you didn't have the luxury of coming to those in the middle of a civil war. What do you think about that?
Yeah,
you're squinting.
I'm fascinated listening to you talk. I had never quite thought of it that way, but you're right. Our theology was greatly under pressure. And in fact, you might say it was definitely a life and death situation.
Yeah.
But what I'm seeing happen now in the American church is kind of the opposite, because I'm looking for my comfort level. I'm looking for my rights and to exercise my rights. I'm putting other people in a life and death situation.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, that's interesting.
That is interesting. I never quite thought of it like that. So let me ask you one other question. We'll kind of change the tune a little bit. People are probably bored of us making people mad right now.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I'm getting lots of emails on this one.
We're both in trouble now.
That's right. Yeah.
So you said something else this morning that I think is really important. And John does this quite a bit in his three little epistles at the end of the New Testament, where he talks about little children, and he talks about young men and young women, and he talks about older men and older women that he calls fathers or mothers. And you were talking about Graceway being not just a multicultural church, but a multi-generational church, and how we have the tendency to group with people that are like us and speculate and assume as to why that other group doesn't reach out to me. Could you unpack that a little bit for us? How do we avoid that? How do we deal with that? And what would you expect as lead pastor for these various tribes within the tribe? What would you expect for them to do?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I think if I could just less philosophically and just, you know, from my seat as lead pastor, number one, I'm incredibly grateful for what Graceway is. The multiculturalism, multi-ethnicity, multi-generational elements of our church that God has provided to us, and that really you led this church to receive and celebrate during your time and tenure. And I think there's some uniqueness to that, right? I mean, where we are especially those things, it's wrapped up into our DNA. I just wanted to ring the bell today and say, yeah, it's good. I'm glad, but we still have cliques and tribalism, you know, in our church experience. And even though we're all sitting in the same room, and even though that makes us unique compared to maybe some other places, we're still not fully integrated in the way that the gospel requires of us. And I think the response to that is that what I would hope for, first for myself, in my leadership and, you know, relationships here, but for anybody, is don't wait on somebody else to, well, two things. Number one, don't wait on somebody else, and don't forget that in the sovereignty of God, in the same way that God put those leaders over us, you're in a church. You've chosen to be in a church, and God sovereignly put you in a church that's as diverse as ours, apparently for your benefit. And so utilize it, right? Don't cloister off with people who are as similar as possible. Really try to integrate yourself into the fullness of what Graceway is. Really enjoy the diversity, really learn from the diversity, and really be proactive in the diversity, meaning find people a different age, find people a different ethnicity, find people who have a different perspective, and don't be self-protecting in that regard. And I tried to say this today, but I think that if we're ever going to fully know God, fully experience God, we have to allow for our worldview and our theology and our perspective to be challenged in the assumption that I don't have the market cornered on God's best practices. And so when somebody disagrees with me, I don't have to be defensive about it. I can operate from the standpoint of maybe I don't agree, but that's not the way that I looked at it. And maybe God's trying to teach me something about himself, about myself, about the church. And so I would want people to be more proactive. I would want people to be more open. And I would want people to be more humble that I don't know everything that I think that I know, and maybe the diversity and the differing perspectives is ultimately for my good. And maybe God is more concerned about my correct theology than I am, and I'll trust him to protect my theology instead of me protect, you know, any divergent perspective from my theology. I would just want us to operate in a lot of gladness, a lot of openness, and a lot of confidence that God can lead us as he sees fit. So anything you'd want to add to that?
No, I totally agree with that. I was thinking you're talking about the different generations, and I think so many times in the church, again, capital C, older people tend to think that they have all the answers. And I'm reminded as I'm here in Central America that when we were going through all of those issues in the midst of a civil war, every member of our pastoral team at the time, we were all in our 20s. And so it's very comfortable to be in our 50s to 70s and think that young people don't know anything. And easy to forget that the only reason that we know anything is because when we were young, we made all the mistakes. And we got all the wounds for that. And I guess that's why as an older person now, I'll get complaints now from all my older friends, and I don't want it to come across like I'm going to say, I prefer to hang out with younger people sure. because I learn from them. And that doesn't mean I don't love people my age and enjoy being with them. But at the same time, I want to be certain that I'm not just hanging out with old people like me, because I can learn as much from young people as they could from me.
Yeah. And that's, you know, if I can just put some shine on you for a minute, there are many, many things that I respect and love about you. But really, you know, as I've had the privilege to really get to know you, and I think uniquely, you know, no one got to succeed you but me, right? So I'm enormously honored by that. So I think we have some unique conversations, but I have watched you, that idea of continuing to learn and grow and not be too proud and not be too afraid to let your perspectives be challenged. I really think it's the secret sauce of Jeff Adams. And I've watched you do it on any issue. I've watched you be open, and I've watched you reformulate things, still thoroughly biblical, still thoroughly wise, and all those kind of things. I think it's one of the top three things that I love about you the most is just your ability. You have such a strong desire to be taught by God and by God's people, and you'll take it from almost anywhere, right? And it's been helpful to me. It's given me confidence to watch you still be thoroughly biblical, thoroughly orthodox, thoroughly all those kind of things. But you've also investigated and experimented so broadly, I think that I can say, God will take care of your theology because I've seen him do it with you. And I want people to have that confidence in God and the Holy Spirit for them, that you can hear other points of view and you're fine. You might actually be better because of it, but we got to get past this. I just got to have everybody reinforce me and my ideas for my sense of well-being and worth. No, it's the opposite. Your best fellowship and your highest joy is through diversity, not through, you know, a homogenous, just agree with me and tell me I'm right. So I think we have to get past that fear if we're going to take the next step here at Graceway.
Yeah, well, thank you for those kind words. I totally agree that we have to learn from each other, and I see that in you, which is one of the reasons that I'm thrilled that you are who you are and where you are. So sure. Thank you for that. So next week, hopefully, I'll be sitting right beside you on the other side of that potted plant behind you or somewhere like that.
Right. Yeah, that sounds good. I'll look forward to it. But yeah, glad we were able to connect and, you know, people see, you know, kind of the Graceway experience. You're in Costa Rica and we're still connected and still talking and it's good.
Well, you have a lot of people in Costa Rica and all of Latin America who watch you on a regular basis. They'll listen to my little Spanish Bible study that I do midweek, but they don't miss the Pastor Tim show on Sunday either.
Oh, don't say that.
I'm serious, man. There are so many people in our network who speak enough English to listen to you and have become a great fan of Graceway on Sunday morning. For the same reason that a lot of Hispanic people are at Graceway on Sunday morning in the same condition. And of course, they have friends and family. And so it's great to see that international network. And we could talk about the other continents as well. But man, thank you again for the good word this morning. And we'll get back together and talk next week.
Sounds good. Love you, PJ.
Love you too.
Thanks for tuning into the Graceway Experience. Hope we can talk again sometime.